Welcome to Agency in Focus, Department of Homeland Security, sponsored by Leidos. Now here's your host, Tom Temin.
In many ways, David Grant is a jack of all trades for FEMA. As FEMA's Associate Administrator for Mission Support, Grant oversees and works to unify the CXO suite so the missionaries feel like they're dealing with one team when they need procurement or technology or human resources help. Grant tells Executive Editor Jason Miller about how the Mission Support Office brings these functions together.
For the most part, our customers are internal to FEMA. Now I'll get into how our staff are deployed to the actual front door of FEMA in a moment. But for the most part, we provide our services to the FEMA customers. So Office of Response and Recovery, for example, that right now is front and center along with our regional administrators in serving the survivors of these disasters. We provide the space, the people, the training, the IT equipment, the security clearances, and the contract support, et cetera, and financing them all. So all of those tools that the front door of FEMA needs to actually serve the survivors and try and meet their needs, we support that through our mission support office.
All right, well, let's dig deep into some of those mission support areas. One of those is acquisition. I know you came to FEMA in 2014, and that was your main role, was to really be part of that FEMA acquisition lead. Talk a little bit about how FEMA's acquisition and really DHS's approach more broadly has really changed over the last 3+ years.
Well, that's a great question. I did come in as the chief procurement officer back in early 2014, and I think the evolution had begun. But I'm gonna talk a little bit about how we've continued it. One of the things that that we've really worked on is connecting the acquisition process to the mission of FEMA. And what I mean by that is we can issue a lot of different contracts that support the mission, but our customers oftentimes don't know exactly what they need when they need it. So one of the initiatives that we started 3.5 years or 4 years ago was we took a sort of a data analytics look at all of the work we do via contracts in support of disasters and started to roll that together in a unified fashion. And we expanded the list of what we call pre-position contracts from about 15 or 20 to now 50 or 60, all in anticipation of disasters that have not yet occurred, so that our folks would have the contracts, our mission folks would have the contracts at their disposal that didn't have to be, you know, sort of plowed in fresh ground, so to speak, that we have already gathered the requirements, negotiated the terms and conditions, and set them in place so that now we can implement the contract solutions rather than trying to identify a contract solution during the disaster. That was one of the biggest initiatives we undertook over the past 4 years, and we still have a ways to go. Certainly, we haven't pre-positioned every requirement, but we've made a lot of progress in that regard.
And that was key, I think, the pre-positioning. I remember going back to Hurricane Katrina and other hurricanes before that, is that there's a lot of those lessons learned. How much water do we need? How much heavy equipment do we need? Or whatever, tents and medical supplies and the rest. And it seems to be like each hurricane, you learn a little bit more, and we'll get into that in a little bit, but that really helps the contracting side understand what those requirements are. And is that kind of how you built up this disaster acquisition effort to around those lessons learned of previous hurricanes?
Absolutely. The key there is communication with our customer. So we'd sit down with, or we do sit down regularly with our Office of Response and Recovery and our regional administrators and other parts of the organization and really identify what are their needs. We actually war game it out. What are your needs? What do you anticipate your needs during a disaster? And of course, there isn't one disaster. We have to look at a whole array of different disasters, man-made, natural disasters, whatever the case is. We have to try and anticipate what the needs might be. We work with our customer to figure that out. And then we'll try and discern that mission need into a set of requirements that we can then go acquire something. And we have found that our partners in the private sector have embraced that because they don't want to be responsive to us on 24-hour notice during a disaster because it's very hard to bring their best solution to bear at that point. But the more we can pre-work those issues with our partners in private sector, the better. But it starts with communication at the front end well before a disaster occurs, and we work through that process of what the mission is versus what the requirements to fall out from that, and then work on the right contract to set up in support of that.
Now, to be clear, you're not doing a depot type of event where you have a warehouse full of water and a warehouse full of...
I mean, we do have various depots around the country. Those are the immediacy needs, so we can move, you know, like a million bottles of water overnight. That's not the issue. But the real key is to get the private sector supply chain management geared up and ready to go so that they can backfill, because really, in the end, I don't think anyone in government would have the depot capacity to handle everything that might come up in a disaster. The key is that you engage the private sector so that they can get the supply chain management, because the assets and resources that are out there in the private sector dwarf what could be in any depot that we could put forth. But they have to know. And it could be anything from, you know, child supplies, diapers, et cetera, to water, to medical supplies, to... The medical is the critical one, actually, is one of the critical ones, because we have to anticipate what kinds of medicines might be needed and where they might be needed and how you might store them, what requires refrigeration, what doesn't. We have to work all of that out so that we can work with the private sector and let them know what's coming and when and how they need to deliver it. Again, heavy reliance on communication well in advance of when that disaster might occur, and then finding the right partners in the private sector who can fill out the supply chain.
You mentioned this idea of exercises or wargaming it. How does that work? Meaning you bring in your private sector partners, or you bring in...
Well, at times. I mean, the main thing we do is we get our customers, the people who have lived and breathed this for years, have lived through the Katrinas and the Sandys and the Ikes and so on and so forth, and really found out we call them after-action reports, what went well and what didn't. Maybe one of the most important questions you can ask is what didn't go well and how can we improve it, and where can the private sector, you know, from our world in procurement, where can the private sector assist in making that better? One of the things that I do admire about FEMA is we will ask ourselves the tough questions. We'll figure out what went well and, as I said, maybe more importantly, what didn't go well. And then we'll try and figure out a solution to anticipate that and make ourselves better prepared for the next one.
David Grant is FEMA's Associate Administrator for Mission Support.
For 15 years, Leidos has seen firsthand the Department of Homeland Security's men and women safeguard the American people, our homeland, and our values. In support of the DHS mission, our technical experts have delivered trusted solutions in mission-based IT, cybersecurity, biometrics, and logistics. Ranked number one on Washington Technology's top 100, Leidos has the experience DHS can count on, and we're ready for your future missions. Learn more at Leidos.com/homeland.
One of the biggest challenges for the Homeland Security Department over the last 5 years is how components understand one another and collaborate. A major reason DHS components have moved closer is the Joint Requirements Council. David Grant is FEMA's Associate Administrator for Mission Support. He tells Executive Editor Jason Miller about how the council is making FEMA more effective in responding to disasters.
There are components, ourselves included, that historically didn't understand how our requirements may or may not interface with another component's requirements, or maybe requirements even at headquarters. And so before you even get into what the system requirements are, you have to talk about what the mission set is that you're trying to meet. And at that point, I think you can find components start using the same lexicon, whether it's an airplane or, for us, it's survivors. How can we support the survivor? Well, we need various items that we need to buy, or we need IT systems to support our ability to deliver it. And at that point, you can start to compare and contrast with other components. So working through the JRC allows us to have those conversations at the mission requirements level. Then you work it down to the requirements level. And I'll tell you, working with them has been enlightening to us. We have embraced it. I was talking to Mark Dolan, the head of the JRC, the other day, and he has admitted. He said FEMA asks us tough questions, and we like to answer those questions because it allows us to then unify around those. And all the other components are doing the same thing. So the second basic point is analytics. What do you have behind your mission need set and your requirements? And are they anecdotal, which they might have been historically, or are they data-driven, which is what we're driving to? And I'm not going to say we're perfect in that regard, but we are maturing and getting a lot better. And that's one of the expectations coming out of the JRC, is that we need analytical support, data-driven decision-making that we can actually prove our point as we go in for some of these programs. That, Jason, allows us to actually define our outcomes better. What do we need this program to do? How will this program affect our ultimate customer, whatever that might be across the department? And using those analytics, we can start to define a program and its deliverables, and then be able to track it. And are we on course? Because you've been around this business, as long as I have. There's no such thing as a program that goes linearly along the path and doesn't vary. There are always going to be issues that arise that you have to look at. You have to decide how you're going to address them. Having that information in your pocket allows you to then analyze it and make the right decisions as you go and implement maybe more effectively. So it's really, this whole process in the JRC has caused us to have conversations, communicate early, talk about mission requirements, and coalesce around a common process. It's so far been very, very effective. We're very supportive of it.
Dave, you mentioned data analytics several times during our conversation, and when you talk about the Joint Requirements Council, one of the things that came up to my mind was several years ago, I remember DHS headquarters talked about something called the Management Cube. We got a good laugh at it because it was, the cube, everything goes in the cube. But talk a little bit about that data analytics effort in terms of how FEMA is starting to use data to make decisions, whether it's through the Joint Requirements Council or just generally through FEMA, through the mission support area that you run.
Sure. It's a good question. And, whether you call it a cube or anything else, to me, the background is that you start the conversation and have a common operating platform to have the conversation about what the requirements are for the ultimate mission need. At least in my career, I try and talk about what the mission expectation is before you start talking about what the requirements are. So I'm going to go back to our pre-position contract as an example. That's not contracting office going off and negotiating 20, or as I said, we had about 20, now we have 50 to 60. That's not a contracting officer saying, hey, I'm going to put a couple of contracts in place because I think we're going to need them. That's sitting down with our chief financial officer, with our chief information officer, with our officer response and recovery, with our various regional administrators, and really taking a look at the data behind what they have done for the past number of years to support the ultimate mission. In this case, let's say the survivor during a disaster, but we do the same thing for various elements of FEMA, and really look at the data. What did we spend? Where did we spend it? Was it effective? How do you measure effectiveness? In one sense, that's fairly easy. Did we get the water to the people who need it? Did we get the blankets and the cots and the diapers and everything else? But in other areas, it's a little more esoteric. You talk about geospatial information and did we use that data that properly or effectively so that we could predict where the floods were going to go? All of this is information which 10 years ago we didn't have or didn't use, and now we're gathering that together, and that allows us to put contracts, effective and efficient contracts, in place prior to the disaster happening. That all happens because you could go in, let's say, our version of the cube and have the conversation with our customer and with all the various providers and the support organizations to say, how can we position the front end of FEMA to be successful on what we call the bad day? When the bad day happens, we don't want our customers to have to worry about or trying to figure out, how do I engage with the support organizations to get the contractors, to get the equipment, to get the space, to get the people in place? That process needs to be put in place. So having that joint conversation well in advance, using the data, again, not anecdotal. It's not just some contracting officer saying, hey, I bought a whole lot of water last year, so I'm going to put a contract together. It's actually getting down to, how do we do it? Where do we store it? How long can it be stored? Where is the private sector with the supply chain? How long after a disaster before they can actually fill that gap so I can time how much I need and when I need and how much I want to hold in reserve, et cetera? All of those are conversations that are based in analytics. And in the last 3 or 4 years, we have really evolved our capability in doing that.
And you hear that time and again throughout the government, that the analytics are just maturing to such a point that the decision-making is getting better. And I don't know if easier is the right word, but at least people are getting more comfortable with it. Do you see that from the CFO's perspective as well as the CIO's perspective as well as the HR perspective?
Absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I mean, in any of those chief officer areas, the fact is they're all interrelated. You need the money in order to accomplish any of those missions, and you need the people, and you need to train them, and you need to acquire the goods and services. You need to outfit the people with the right tools. I mean, we're going from bringing the customer to us kind of perspective that we might have done 5 or 10 years ago to us going to the customer. We want to outfit our people that go out and do the direct servicing to the survivors with mobile devices so that I can go meet you where you are, not have you drive 15 miles to where I might be on your bad day. Let me come out to you, and we actually have people walking through the neighborhoods now with a mobile device, helping people fill out their forms where they are, so that they can get what they need faster. So we're exploring any avenue to try and make it easier for the survivor. And again, we use the data to help drive us that. We can actually predict what neighborhoods will be most affected by certain events so that we can pre-position assets closest to that neighborhood, outside the zone that would be directly impacted, but a lot closer than a depot that might be, you know, 6 hours away. And we use data to do that.
David Grant is FEMA's Associate Administrator for Mission Support.
For 15 years, Leidos has seen firsthand the Department of Homeland Security's men and women safeguard the American people, our homeland, and our values. In support of the DHS mission, our technical experts have delivered trusted solutions in mission-based IT, cybersecurity, biometrics, and logistics. Ranked number one on Washington Technology's top 100, Leidos has the experience DHS can count on, and we're ready for your future missions. Learn more at Leidos.com/homeland.
David Grant is FEMA's Associate Administrator for Mission Support.
Dave, you mentioned the mission of FEMA really was to help and assist disasters. This has been an incredibly busy hurricane season so far.
Indeed.
It's not over yet. Talk a little bit about the hurricane season's impact on your area, the mission support area so far. How have you guys been able to react and stay above water, so to speak?
Sure. Well, yeah, pardon the pun on stay above water with all these hurricanes, but I'll tell you a couple of things. Number one, we FEMA-wide, this is not a mission support statement, but FEMA-wide, we've adopted the mission set that we are every employee is an emergency manager. So no matter what role you play on what we call a blue sky day, we actually have folks that are being trained to fill some role in emergency management. So no matter where you are in FEMA, you have an emergency management title of some sort so that we are preparing to assist wherever that comes, wherever that need comes out. Well, now with Harvey and Irma and Maria and Nate and the California wildfires, I mean, these are five rapid fire events over the past 8 weeks that have absolutely stressed FEMA. And, for example, in mission support, almost 70% of my organization is deployed in some form or fashion to directly support one of those disasters. Across FEMA, it's more like 75 to 80% of the people are deployed. We expect our numbers, frankly, to go up. We had put a hold on the procurement office because, again, right in the middle of that, we have our end of fiscal year. We started deploying procurement people on Sunday, October 1. So FEMA mission support staff, no matter where they are stepping into the void to help FEMA in emergency management cadres wherever they're needed. So that in turn puts a stress on our normal day-to-day operations, and we have folks that that are back in the home office that we in the leadership roles have to prioritize what has to get done and what needs to get done, and then those people are doing sometimes the job of two or three people to make sure that we keep the trains running on time and effectively and efficiently while the rest of our folks are out supporting the disaster survivors.
It's incredible when you talk about 70 to 80% of your people are deployed. How do you deal with that, meaning there's everyday work that has to get done. You can't bring in detailees. You can't bring in part-timers.
Well, we can, but we've deployed those. There's something called the Surge Capacity Workforce that Acting Secretary Duke has been extraordinarily supportive of, as have all the component heads. While I was the acting deputy administrator, that was one of the activities that I personally briefed all of the component heads and deputy component heads that this was before the disasters hit, that there is something as you step into these jobs called the Surge Capacity Workforce, where several thousand people have pre-signed up to support should a disaster happen. We'd only deployed that once in Sandy. Well, we have deployed it in full. We had about 1,300 people, I believe, in Sandy that were deployed. We have deployed, I think, close to 6,000 people in the Surge Capacity Workforce now. So those folks are coming in, sometimes doing disaster workload, you know, answering the phones. You can imagine how strenuous that job is when you talk to survivors on a really, really bad day. But they are also stepping into back office functions that they may have expertise in. So as we deploy either contracting or HR or security people forward, they might step and fill in some of our roles as well. The second part of that is that, as I mentioned earlier, as a leadership, we have to prioritize what has to get done and then what can get done in short order. But most importantly, for example, in procurement, you had end of fiscal year. We had to close out our fiscal year as efficiently and effectively as possible. So we withheld people from being deployed there. But now that that's over, we're deploying people. So you make decisions like that along the way. And sometimes those are hard decisions because that means some projects or programs that we feel are very important to the agency but are not more important than the disaster response. We have to put them sort of on a slower train. We slow down those a little bit, and we'll pick them back up when our staff comes back.
And how's this been for you as the associate administrator, once the acting deputy administrator? Have you gotten any sleep? Have you been working six and a half,
well,
seven and a half days a week?
It has been a long road and a hard road, but there are folks, that whatever effort I'm putting in, frankly, pales in comparison. We've got folks that are heavily involved in the response area that have been working 55, 60 days straight, working oftentimes 10, 12, 14-hour days, sometimes longer. I had one particular staff member in procurement that went 36 straight hours. It was the last day of the fiscal year. They had worked two shifts in support of the disaster because the need was there, and then it was the last day of the fiscal year the next day, so they just stayed at work. So everybody is stepping up to that, and my job in comparison is pretty darn easy compared to those folks. But we have folks in logistics and response and recovery and housing and individual assistance that are just working, an inordinate amount of hours. And they're really very, very, very proud of them and this organization, because this is as difficult a disaster season, if you want to call it that, as many of us have ever seen in our careers.
David Grant is FEMA's Associate Administrator for Mission Support.
There's more to this interview, and you can hear the whole thing at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Agency in Focus, Department of Homeland Security, sponsored by Leidos, on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search DHS15.
For 15 years, Leidos has seen firsthand the Department of Homeland Security's men and women safeguard the American people, our homeland, and our values. In support of the DHS mission, our technical experts have delivered trusted solutions in mission-based IT, cybersecurity, biometrics, and logistics. Ranked number one on Washington Technology's top 100, Leidos has the experience DHS can count on, and we're ready for your future missions. Learn more at Leidos.com/homeland.